Trump token stuff, his DeFi token is out. How's it going? Kamala also said something about crypto. Is that a pivot? Or is it just really weird? Also, the election odds also doing something weird. Why are crypto prediction markets giving Trump such a massive lead? Or are they being manipulated?
Bankless Nation is the third week of October. It's time for the Bankless Weekly Roll-Up. David, since our last roll-up, you got punched in the face. You punched a man in the face.
I did.
Lots of
I
things
did.
Happened. We're going to talk about that maybe toward the end. But okay, how you feeling, dude? How you feeling on the week? You won your fight.
I'm feeling great. The week has been awesome. It's a fun week in crypto. If you're talking about the context of like being post-fight, like my head still hurts.
Not as much as the other guy, maybe? How's Kane doing?
I'm assuming not as much as the other guy.
All right. Well, that's the mark of a champion fighter. We'll talk to David more about the fight at the end of this episode. But first, David, we are 17 days until the election, so we got to check in on our candidates. Donald Trump kicked off his WLFI token sales. Remember that DeFi protocol?
Yep.
Well, he kicked off the pre-launch. He sold some tokens. How'd that go? We'll check in. And on the other side, Kamala Harris said something about crypto. Was it positive? Was it negative?
Was it weird?
Yeah, it was kind of weird, definitely.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. And then also, speaking of Trump and Kamala, the Poly market has completely diverged on these two candidates, giving Trump a 62% odd to Kamala's 37%, where just a week ago it was neck and neck. So what's going on over in the world of Poly market, and do other polls, do other predictions line up with that? Meanwhile, in Ethereum land, while ETH price is kind of in the basement, the community is starting to get kind of spicy. Seeing a lot of confidence out there, a lot of ratioing of alternative communities out there. And meanwhile, New Tech is also shipping. Fuel is launching their high-performance Layer 2s. Paradigm is introducing their high-performance Layer 2s. And then Conduit has taken all of its chains, of which it supports, to also become high-performance Layer 2s. So a lot of scaling coming around in the different corners of the Ethereum ecosystem.
In the Bitcoin world, we're going to talk about Sailor. He's getting ready to launch a Bitcoin bank. What actually is that? And Kraken with a wrapped Bitcoin product. We'll talk about all of that. And David, speaking of basements, we got a fun kind of basement, not the prices down kind of basement, from our friends and sponsors over at B3. This is a Layer 3 gaming ecosystem. And you can find more about it at basement.fun. David, what is this?
Yeah, think of like the OP stack, but for games. The base chain, and this is Basement is coming out of the core base team before they pivoted into building basement.fun, because the base chain, pretty fast, but still not fast enough to build on-chain games. And so this is what Basement is building, a Layer 3 ecosystem that's optimized for games. I think like right now the games are kind of like what you would find on, I remember playing on addictinggames.com or miniclip.com back in like the early thousands. Think like games like that, except there is a big on-chain element for them. Some of the logic, it might be on-chain. You can farm XP points, experience points, which are, of course, tokens on-chain. Each one of these games might have their own token as well. Just a collection of on-chain gaming activities that you can find on their website. They're kind of a distributor of all of these different games that you can go fun, and hopefully they're addicting. And so you can find them at basement.fun today. Start collecting some XP. They've already partnered with notable gaming brands such as Parallel, Mighty Bear Games, Nifty Island, and already have thousands and thousands of players. And so since it's on chain, you already know you're going to earn some tokens. You can check them out at bankless.cc/B3.
David, there's a Mudang game that I've been wanting to
play. Yeah,
you
like that one?
So I got to get there. And
I do like the idea that when you collect coins in the game, that those coins can become coins in your wallet. That is, that's interesting.
Yeah. But they don't like, it's not like the play to earn type of like advertising. This is like an appeal to normies thing. Like it's kind of like fun first.
Yeah, they've taken advantage of some like wallet abstraction tech. So you don't need a wallet to go there. They will just spin up a wallet in the back end.
Okay, let's check in on October, shall we? Okay, we're 18 days in to the month. This is supposed to be a glorious month for crypto prices. How we doing? Let's check in on our friend Bitcoin. What's the price in the week?
On this week, up 11%. Started the week at $59,000, currently clocking in at $67,300. So a very solid week on the week. We also basically the last weekly roll up, we just painted the floor. So that was the low. And so we're kind of measuring from trough to peak right now.
Yeah.
But we could peak even higher. We could keep going even higher.
I mean, like post fight, right? That's why the market's bullish post that Kane versus David fight.
There's only one reason.
We are up in October, though. It actually has, like, October has actually delivered. So it started the month at 63K on Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. How about ETH? What is the, has it been October for ETH?
I want even more Octoberness for basically all these assets. I think we are at current starting prices. The first thing that happened in October was we dumped. We have now returned to October 1st levels.
Why did we dump that hard? Ether.
Why did we dump that hard?
I'll have to go back and listen to the first roll-up of the month to actually find out. Like, look at these red candles here.
Yeah. Was this... Anyways, ETH up 9% on...
This is like war stuff. Do you remember? This is
Middle East. Oh, yeah, war stuff. Right.
Oh, God.
The third war of the recent era.
Yeah, okay.
Anyways, this week, ETH is up 9% on the week. Start of the week, $2,350. Ending the week, $2,610, where we currently are.
Flow's looking pretty flat, David. But actually, you know, like...
Inflows.
Yeah, inflows. More inflows than outflows, I guess, on the week.
That's right.
So yeah. ETH still has a lot to chip away. It's like net outflows.
Yeah, we've got a big hole to climb out of.
You like, what is this, 500 million? Still
million,
net outflows.
Right.
Yeah. Flows. So I'll be happy when that gets to zero, but it's just like, we're chipping away at it. How about the ratio? Are we chipping away on the ratio?
We have been flat on the ratio since October 3rd. 0.038739, flat ratio.
People are sad.
Not down, though. The first step to going up is to stop going down, and we've done that.
What do you mean? Do you want to see down? This has been down over the last 2 years. let me show you the ratio over time. This is Evan SS6, who's actually, like, I think, an ETH bull on Twitter anyways.
He's an ETH bull.
He says, kudos to anyone who could still bull post when this has been a straight line down for 2 years. You have more conviction than me. We haven't had two consecutive weekly green candles since May 2023. And he's showing a chart of the ETH Bitcoin ratio, the ratio we were just talking about, David. It's been in this descending channel here over the past 2 years. And we haven't had two consecutive weekly green candles since May 2023. Kind of bad.
Bullish. Like, at some point, the ratio gets so low that, like, a basic, like, unopinionated mean reversion becomes the status quo. And, like, we're kind of getting there.
Sentiment's kind of bad out there on ETH still. Although, David, we'll talk about this more.
I feel good.
I feel fine. I feel like things are turning around, right? I think things are turning around, but we'll have to see. How about crypto market cap as a whole?
2.4. We're almost at that 2.5 watermark, which is totally arbitrary, but I'm still paying attention to it. So $2.41 trillion on the week.
Well, if we want to get bullish, let's flip over to the layer two. Some good things happening in L2 land. Of course, this layer two update brought to you by our friends over at Mantle, which is a fantastic layer two. You should definitely check out. Okay, where should we maybe start this? I think this was a fantastic tweet from the Grow the Pi folks. They put out fantastic L2 analytics. And I think this data point pushes back against this narrative that L2s are parasitic for Ether, the asset, and for Ethereum. And here's what I mean. They tweet this. Layer 2s have more value locked in ETH than in stables. There is $11 billion worth of ETH on layer 2s right now. This is split between, like, Arbitrum, Base, OP mainnet, and, like, on down to the other layer 2s. What I think this shows is that's $11 billion worth of ETH being consumed in these layer 2s as a monetary unit. What you and I would say is, like, ETH as money. Others would call this kind of like a, you know, store of value, or being used as economic bandwidth or collateral. So I think there's a untold story here of ETH actually being used as money in these layer two economies, and that being a source of demand. The market doesn't see that right now as clearly. They're looking very much at ETH from a, you know, from a fees perspective, and they're seeing fee revenue drop on Ether. I think they're not paying as much attention to this story, which is ETH emerging as a monetary unit inside of these L2 economies. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think the bare perspective here is that there used to be all of this ETH, this massive amounts of ETH. How much? Like $10 billion, $11 billion of ETH that used to be on the Ethereum layer one. And now it's not on the Ethereum layer one. Now it went elsewhere. And so the Ethereum layer one is like being left behind, right? It's not capturing the fees. It's not capturing anything. And a lot of people just don't see the perspective of money. Like, maybe we need to find a different word for people that don't like the money word. Like, high quality liquid asset is apparently a term used in TradFi that kind of means the same thing that we're saying when we say ETH is money. ETH is like the high quality liquid asset of these layer twos, and these layer twos are using them. But also, it's like this tweet is positioning ETH versus stablecoins. In my mind, it's like ETH and stablecoins. Like, these things are making each other much more liquid. The more stablecoins on Ethereum there are, the more liquid ETH is, and vice versa. I want more. I just want more total value put on all of these chains.
Yeah, I do think these layer two economies are still in their infancy too. There's a lot of cool things happening there. But there's another story in L2 land that I think is interesting. This is a tweet from Anthony Sassano. Blobs almost at target. Going to be interesting to see what happens when blobs enter a period of sustained price discovery. And then he posts a Dune Analytics dashboard here. Can you explain this tweet? A lot of people don't understand what this tweet means, what the context is, like what even blobs are. Can you explain what Anthony's saying, what the significance is?
So every 12 seconds, we produce an Ethereum layer one block. In one block, there are there's three blobs. There's space for three blobs. Layer twos can use one of these blobs to post their data for all of the recent transactions, the proof of the transactions, into Ethereum layer one blob space. So every 12 seconds, we have space for three layer twos to do this. Layer twos don't need to post a blob every single slot. They can just choose to use blobs as they see fit. But it's one of the bandwidths. It's a component of bandwidth on the Ethereum layer one. We have layer one block space where you can do actual like normal execution transactions, or you can post blobs to blob space and there's space for three blobs.
And blob space, David, is like a fast lane for layer twos specifically.
Yeah, because the data that's being posted to blobs is aggregate of hundreds, thousands of user transactions on the respective layer twos that are consuming blob space. Right now, we have been under target, as in there has been like maybe an average of 2.7 blobs consumed per Ethereum block, but that number is approaching 3. And once that number hits the target, it's kind of like an EIP-1559 mechanism. Once we start being 3 or above, all of a sudden we start to induce blob fees. And so it starts to cost more money. Right now, blobs are free. You're not being charged to the layer
free,
two
right?
for anything. This is part of the component of just like, oh, layer twos are parasitic to Ethereum because they're not paying any fees. Oh, once they hit the 3 number, then the blobs will actually start to cost money. And then layer twos will start paying for blob space. I think people are starting to get like bullish about this, as in like, yo, like we're going to start to capture, like we have two fee revenues, right? We have layer one execution fees. That's EIP-1559. And then we have blob space fees. And so everyone's like, ooh, we're getting price action. We're going to get some fees coming in for layer twos. I think like, whoa, guys, yo. We want to scale blobs very far. Like, we want to see price discovery when there are 256 blobs per block, not 3. And so it's too soon to get excited about blob fee capture, because we need like 100x more capacity than what we currently have. So I think it's a little too soon to start like being excited for fee capture, because we have scale. We need 100 times more scale, and we get that with 100 times more blobs.
One thing I'll add to that, though, is I think that's not the only reason that people are bullish. It's not just from like because of fee capture that comes with blob space contention. I think they're also bullish that this blob space filled up so quickly. I mean, this is a tweet saying L2 blob demand is starting to reach the target. I didn't really expect this until like 2025. The fact that this has happened so quickly really shows the induced demand in the layer two ecosystem and all of that picking up. One interesting question that falls out of this is, okay, how many transactions per second can we support with the existing like proto-dank sharding blob space that we have on Ethereum? There was a series of blog posts that it seems like Vitalik is writing on the Ethereum roadmap. And one of them this morning that was published actually answers this question. So apparently, with the current amount of blob space that we have, if you're just considering ERC-20 transaction, if everything was kind of on a layer two roll up and they used Ethereum for data availability, so we're not talking about Validiums or anything else, about 174 transactions per second is what we can support throughout the entire roll up economy. So, I mean, it's still quite shy of Vitalik's North Star like target, which is like 100,000 transactions per second across the L2 rollup ecosystem. Now, with PeerDAS, which is kind of the next upgrade and expansion of Ethereum blob space, we can get close to 1,000 TPS in terms of like rollup. But again,
Peerdesk gives us a count, a blob target of 8 to 16. So going from 3 to 8 to 16.
Yeah, exactly. So now we're in this stage, and we said this when proto-dank sharding was like introduced, of just continuous expansion of mm-hmm. blob space. And so we have our first batch, our first blob space stimulus, and then Peerdesk will be a next one. There's also things we can do on the layer one, right? To increase gas limits and capacity for more blob space. So I think now we're in a stage of like incremental progress on expanding the blob space. And I guess to your point, David, we better do it because the L2 demand is here. Right. And we don't want to take the foot off the gas pedal in the Ethereum community.
And a lot of the layer twos are saying we would enjoy consuming more blobs. And we haven't even entered the era of base rollups, which I think is coming. And also base rollups are incredibly blob consumptive. They need more blobs than the average rollup. They're very blobby.
I didn't
blobby.
Know that, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Base rollups want more
hungry
blobs.
Hungry for blobs?
They're hungry for blobs. That's right. And I think base rollups, I think people are starting to like figure this out. They're slowly starting, everything's starting to point towards the base rollup future.
Yeah.
But like so much of everything that like people are figuring out how to FUD Ethereum and from the different ways that they can FUD Ethereum, like base rollups is like this really elegant solution to all of them. And when they start to like really come online and gain adoption, like we need more blobs for them.
Oh, you and I are very bullish on based rollups. If you don't know what based rollups are or what we're talking about right now, we will have
a series
of episodes.
We've
don't
got
worry.
Podcasts for you.
Stay tuned for that. Okay, what are the odds that our friend over at BlackRock, Larry Fink, knows what a blob is, David? What do you think? Over under
he
on that.
He has heard the words blobs before.
You think he's heard the word blobs?
Yeah, I think he's heard the word blobs, yeah.
Really? So, yeah. Okay, well, that would surprise me. But, he's CEO of BlackRock. He's like a pretty smart guy from all reports here. So he had some comments on not just Bitcoin, but also Ethereum on the week. And I got to say, the wider context of this is I don't think BlackRock could be any more bullish on crypto as like an mm-hmm. asset class. And like this also came through. And we were talking to some BlackRock crypto folks at the permissionless conference last week. It's just like very clear to me that they are kind of going all in to this asset class. So there was a Q3 earnings call for BlackRock where Larry Fink was kind of reporting out to analysts, and he just gave the stats of like the iShares Bitcoin ETFs. Just kind of promoting that. And he said this: "We believe Bitcoin is an asset class in itself, is an alternative to other commodities like gold. And I think the application of this form of investment will be greatly expanded to the role of Ethereum as blockchain can grow dramatically." On presidents, right? Kamala versus Trump. He said this: "I'm not sure if either president or other candidate would make a difference. I do believe the utilization of digital assets is going to become more and more of a reality worldwide." So he's saying, hey, regardless of who's elected, you can't stop this train, as Lynn Alden might say, right? These crypto assets are going to be a big deal.
Yeah, I've heard that take actually more and more. That was one of the themes at Permissionless, is actually the election outcome doesn't really matter nearly as much as the Senate outcome, because the Senate outcome, if we can flip that to being more pro crypto, then we can finally get some crypto legislation in, and that's going to be the thing that moves the needle a lot. But that being said, like, we had a very green week in crypto prices the same week that like Trump has pulled ahead in the polls, and the Kamala campaign seems to be on their heels. So who knows? All right. Coming up next, more Trump token stuff. His DeFi token is out. How is it going? He's currently in the middle of the sale. How is that sale doing? Kamala also said something about crypto. Is that a pivot? Or is it just really weird? and then also the election odds also doing something weird. Why are crypto prediction markets giving Trump such a massive lead, or are they being manipulated? So we're going to talk about all these stories and more. But first, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially Kraken and their new Cracked BTC. If you want to use a new Bitcoin, check out Cracked BTC. It's not actually called Cracked BTC. It's Kraken BTC, but I think they should call it Cracked BTC, newly from Kraken. We're going to talk about that later in the show, too. But let's go hear from Kraken right now. If you want a crypto trading experience backed by world-class security and award-winning support teams, then head over to Kraken, one of the longest-standing and most secure crypto platforms in the world. Kraken is on a journey to build a more accessible, inclusive, and fair financial system, making it simple and secure for everyone, everywhere, to trade crypto. Kraken's intuitive trading tools are designed to grow with you, empowering you to make your first or your your 100th trade in just a few clicks. And there's an award-winning client support team available 24/7 to help you along the way, along with a whole range of educational guides, articles, and videos. With products and features like Kraken Pro and Kraken NFT Marketplace and a seamless app to bring it all together, it's really the perfect place to get your complete crypto experience. So check out the simple, secure, and powerful way for everyone to trade crypto, whether you're a complete beginner or a seasoned pro. Go to kraken.com/bankless to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Tired of juggling multiple wallets and websites just to navigate Web3? Meet Magic Eden, the home of Web3. It is becoming a super DApp where you can do everything cross-chain all in one place. They're solving UX issues by building products across every chain ecosystem, swaps, borrowing and lending, NFTs, perps, and more, all seamlessly cross-chain. Instead of hopping between countless sites and handling multiple wallets, just use Magic Eden. Save time and get to the meme coining faster. Plus, the ME token is coming out this quarter from the ME Foundation. If you've used any of their protocols, like the NFT platform, you can claim some. So check out Magic Eden today and watch them become a super DApp and the home of Web3 in real time. You can get there at magiceden.io to get started. Imagine a future where AI and blockchain converge, where decentralized intelligence operates transparently with Web3 infrastructure, unlocking boundless human potential. And that future is here with Zero Gravity, the first decentralized AI operating system. Zero Gravity isn't just faster, it's 50,000 times faster and 100 times more cost-efficient than current alternatives, unleashing the power of high data applications and modular AI. With unrivaled throughput, limitless scalability, and a verified AI framework, Zero Gravity is turning the dream of on-chain AI into reality. Curious about how AI and Web3 can reshape the future? You can visit zerog.ai to explore the infrastructure that's revolutionizing decentralized AI.
17 days until the U.S. presidential election. All right, some numbers that are interesting we should check in on is this one from Polymarket, right? So Donald Trump has pulled ahead on prediction markets like Polymarket. So Trump is now at 62% at the time of recording his odds of winning the presidential election. Kamala Harris at 38%. This is kind of crazy because this has been trading like neck and neck for quite some time here.
Kamala got actually named as a candidate, it's been basically within 3%.
Yeah, I mean, look at these numbers, like, you know, Kamala ahead, then Trump ahead, 50-50, and then suddenly this divergence. So the question,
complete divergence, yeah.
Yeah, and this is getting tweeted all around. Like, Polymarket is mainstream at this point in time. It's on mainstream news, like Twitter.
The app is getting downloaded more than any other news organization's app. It's in the news category.
It's crazy.
It's getting downloaded.
Elon Musk is tweeting this out, of course. It's like, it's particularly because it's favorable towards Trump. So a question I think we all have is, why is this so different than the poll-based predictions that are going on? So, David, you know, we had Nate Silver on. We talked about this a little bit, but at that time, Polymarket was like, you know, trading 50-50, kind of, it was a coin flip. But now it's really diverged from models like Nate Silver's model. So this is Nate Silver's model. Let me pull this up. Look at this. This is as of kind of the same
day. 50-50. That is 50-50.
Okay. And so, like, the question I was asking is, like, all right, why is there the divergence between Polymarket and, like, say, Nate Silver's model? I got some interesting answers. One, is some detail around, it's not just Polymarket. If you're curious, oh, this is just a Polymarket thing, it's kind of the crypto bros bidding it up. It's not just Polymarket, actually, David. It's all of the prediction markets, pretty much. So Pinnacle has Trump at 60%, Bet365, 58%, BetOnline, 58%. It's not just crypto bias from using Polymarket. Some people said it's because Polymarket is this is according to Adam Cochran, a single input crypto product. And I'm asking why a multi-input model would have different outcomes than a single input crypto product. I'm pretty sure that's wrong, David, because I don't think Polymarket is a single input at all. It's just kind of like
the
entire market.
Actually, it's the most incredibly diversified input model.
Yeah. So when I asked this on Twitter, I got a lot of wrong answer. I think Adam Cochran is kind of like wrong on this. And another take is because prediction markets are some of the most powerful entertainment tools ever created for fans to rally around their favorite all-stars with real stakes. This might be actually closer to what I think could be going on. It's basically like, hey, this is like entertainment based like betting. It's not just for kind of like the win. It's not a perfectly efficient market.
Right.
It's more like a, you know, like my sports team. I want my sports team to win.
You're
and
gonna
my
watch
fans
the election.
Are
might as well put some money on it.
Yeah. Nate Silver actually wrote a blog post about this. I had to unlock, so I've unlocked this for you guys. His explanation is, he says this, sometimes market sentiment has a mind of its own. That can especially happen when traders are bored and angsty because they're in the doldrums. He continues, as I describe in my book, for certain types of major events like the Super Bowl, there's so much recreational money that there's often not enough sharp money to take it all off the table. So a single whale with bottomless pockets can feed a market for
years.
There's
more dumb money than smart money.
That's basically what he's saying. He goes on, and these are asymmetries in who trades at these markets and the political moods they strike. In the Trump era, Republicans tend to project confidence while Democrats tend to project anxiety. So this might be a reason, just like Trump voters are kind of like overconfident, or Trump bettors are overconfident. Anyway, a slew of different answers to this, including another one that I like is basically think of Nate's model is based on poll data, right? So he's almost like a fund manager, like kind of like making a bet. Whereas like Polymarket,
a fund manager of statistics.
Yeah, he's like a fund manager, whereas Polymarket is like what the market says. And so, you know, Nate could be like, nah, the market's wrong. Here's what the poll says, and you can make a bet on that. But the general market is prediction markets, and it's giving Trump a sizable lead here. Are there other explanations from this that you've seen?
Yeah, so there is another corner to investigate why Polymarket is so divergent, and this is the world of on-chain data. And so this is a tweet that has gone viral in the last like couple days or so from Fozzy Diablo, who says, a mysterious trader with four different Polymarket accounts, Freddy9999, Princess Caro, Mitchie, Theo4, have all been making substantial bets in favor of Donald Trump winning the election. Freddy9999 has conducted over 1,600 trades supporting Trump in the past 24 hours, totally more than $4 million. They have also purchased more than 3 million shares betting that Trump would win the popular vote, and nearly 1.5 million shares that Trump would carry Pennsylvania, a crucial battleground state that is viewed as the most likely tipping point state in this cycle. And so he has also made investments into these contracts endorsing Republican politicians, such as Ambassador Nikki Haley, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. And so all in total, Freddie 999's positions is valued at more than $14 million on the platform, all in favor of Republican candidates. The second holder, Princess Caro, joined in September with position valued at $16 million with a current profit of $661 million. Wow. I mean, great trade.
Doing well.
And traded $21 million across 14 different markets. But also, they did these time analysis of when these accounts are making their trades, and there's very clear clustering and time preferences. So they're all happening in the same time, but also when like one of these accounts stops trading, another one of these accounts starts. So like Freddy99999 will make a bunch of trades, and then they will stop, and then Princess Caro will make a bunch of trades, and they will stop, and they're all happening in the same time of the day. And also, interestingly, they all have either $1 million or $500 million clips of USEC being withdrawn from Kraken to send into these accounts. So very similar behavior coming from these accounts. And all in all, there's something like, I think, $24 million that was come out of Kraken into these accounts to make pro-Republican candidate bids, especially on the Donald Trump, Kamala Harris market. So much, in fact, Ryan, that people are starting to make arbitrages across the different prediction markets. So all financial markets are linked together. And so even though other prediction markets are following suit, they're all saying the same things. It's because arbitrage is happening across all of them.
Oh, wow. Like, so Polymarket's really like the biggest liquidity book, but other markets are just following that because of arb?
Exactly. There's so much volume going into the Polymarket from these buyers, these Republican account buyers, that it's this yoinking all of the other prediction markets with them. And so there's a link in the show notes for this guy who kind of did some like investigative journalism on who this trader is. They think it's a Frenchman of all people. And it's definitely in European hours, maybe even later.
Yeah.
They found this guy in the Polymarket Discord and said, hey, are you this person? And then they got erratic. And then deleted their account, which is like, it's weird to get erratic while also holding like $25 million.
But say this is true. Like, what's kind of the implication here? So, you know, like some whale is betting on a bunch of Republican candidates, right? Like, it's a free market. Yeah. Everybody's able to bet, you know, or not bet. They put skin in the game. If he's right, he wins. If he's wrong, he loses. Like, what? But is there some other implication here?
Well, I think that's going to be answered as to like where this money came from. Is it one degen's money and they're just like yelling $25 million on Trump and other Republicans because that's what they believe? Like, okay, maybe. Another conspiracy that I've heard, it's actually a super PAC and they've decided that this is actually the best use of their money to like influence sentiment and positivity towards one side. Haseeb didn't like that take. He says actually being the underdog is bullish. So if you believed this, then if you were like pro Kamala, this is what you would do because now all the Kamala supporters are like, oh no, like we got to get off our butts and go vote.
Right.
POC and star, it really depends on where the money came from.
Right. Well, it's interesting. Yeah. Because if Trump isn't such a lead, the other way you could read this is like, oh, Trump voters can just stay home. You know?
Yeah. And yeah. Like, just chill. Like we've got this.
So we don't know what's if somebody's manipulating this. We don't know what side is manipulating or if that's even worth the cost. Anyway, so interesting, I think, what's going on with prediction markets. And of course, this is a much richer data set than just like polling data. Because polling data just kind of captures polling. It's like, you know, delayed. And so there's something to this market. You just got to like balance all the signals together and see like what it means. But I guess, David, we'll find out in 17 days what hopefully anyway, what really happens with respect to the election. Let's check in on Trump's DeFi token. So launched this week. Is this just to accredited investors? I'm pretty sure, right? So like
accredited investor sale. Yeah, that's right.
What happened with the WFLI token? This is the World Liberty Financial Token, which is kind of like a reskinned borrowing lending platform built on Aave, I believe. So how did the token sale go?
Okay, so WLFI tokens being sold at 1.5 pennies a pop. There's a 100 billion total supply. Again, this token will be non-transferable for 12 months. They have been planning on raising $300 million at a $1.5 billion fully diluted valuation.
That's so a big ICO, right?
Big ICO, selling 20% of the total token supply. The current sale, the time of recording, is clocking in at $12.4 million of sales, which is a lower number than the $300 million target. Incoming sales is starting to taper off. So overall, it's not like looking great. 12,000 number of individual investors here, or at least individual sales. Unless some whale comes in and starts like really like pumping up these numbers, we're going to be falling short of the target $300 million raise.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, at a $1.5 billion valuation, I don't want to invest in that. Okay, so what's next for World Liberty Financial? The first phase is they're going to launch on Scroll, which is actually interesting. That checks out as to how Sandy Pang from Scroll became the advisor to World Liberty Financial. They're going to just start with letting users lend and borrow, starting Bitcoin, Ether, and stables. Then they integrate with centralized exchanges to have native on-ramps. And then they will fractionalize real world assets and obtain regulatory licenses for doing so after that. And they also plan to launch a stablecoin debit card. So like actually kind of like leaning into my panel on permissionless with all the DeFi folks.
Yeah.
There's like this whole like reskinning of DeFi, like investment category that's going on. Like this is what Kane from Infinex is doing. This is what World Liberty Financial is doing. Hey, there's DeFi out there. Let's just skin it up, make it sexy, smooth it over,
stamp package Trump it up name
and,
on
and
it.
Stamp Trump and then sell it for $1.5 billion.
Well, I mean, that was a very ambitious plan, let's just say, to do that kind of like on a ICO basis. Like, yeah, I think the reskinning meta is hard to raise at a $1.5 billion valuation on that, especially when you're going from like nothing. But I think they were betting on sort of the Trump brand to carry them through. I sort of wonder if Trump is just like, I'm launching a meme coin, like how well that would have done.
Honestly, like running that thought experiment, launching a meme coin on Pumped On Fun, like how much fees does Pumped On Fun give you?
I don't know.
But like some. And now with this money that he's raised, this $12 million, he has to go build this thing.
A
meme coin, he doesn't have to do anything. And you could probably make more than $12 million of fees just on the meme coin.
I know. Just like the meta right now, the narrative, like utility is bearish, right? It's like you actually have to do work when there's utility. Yeah. But just like meme coins, it's just whatever. You know, people will buy.
He is a meme.
I'm not saying that's
why
what it should be.
Why not just do the meme thing? Nobody doesn't understand it.
Anyway, that's Donald Trump. That's what he's doing. Let's move to Kamala Harris. So she said something about crypto this week. What was the message coming from the Kamala Harris campaign, David?
Oh, you're going to make me say this. Kamala released a proposal called the Opportunity Agenda for Black Men that mentions that over 20% of Black Americans own or have in the past owned crypto. And that she wants to support a crypto regulatory framework that protects Black men who invest and own crypto. Did you have that on your bingo card?
No, I didn't. This is from the KamalaHarris.com website, and it's exactly what you said. It's part of a platform Vice President Harris will deliver for Black men. And they talk about crypto as a subcomponent because 20% of Black American men own crypto, according to them. And then they also bring in other things about, you know, like debt forgiveness for Black entrepreneurs, and also like legalizing recreational marijuana and creating opportunities for Black Americans. So it's not a program targeted at crypto users.
No.
It's a program targeted as like, oh, these are like, we're losing the Black American vote here,
right?
Yes. Like male American vote. So what do we do? Oh, like, what are some things this cohort likes, right?
Right. Like, exactly.
They put together these things.
And we know that like Black men or like all the other populations of the United States, people like crypto. Like, it's actually a very strong voter base, including Black men.
Yes.
But also not specifically other people too. But since the Kamala administration campaign has decided that Black men are like the next
most marginal voter
that they want to get to vote for them, they're like, okay, what do Black men like? Crypto? Yeah. All right. Like, so, we're gonna say some things about crypto,
dude. I don't know, man. It feels it's weird. Like, that's what we've said
it's
many
very
times.
Weird.
It feels so cringe to me. This is like the fourth thing the Kamala Harris campaign has said about crypto, and it's done in kind of a weird way. Like, first of all, I think this is like a vague promises and nothingness. Like, even the statement, ignore kind of the Black men thing, but like, we're going to support digital asset regulation so that Black men who invest in it and own these assets are protected, right?
Yeah,
what does that
like
even
that.
Mean?
I'm putting that to bias towards negative.
Right, like Gary Gensler says he's like always protecting people. That's why he does what he does.
I don't want the government to protect me.
Yeah, so there's vague
nothingness. I want the military to protect me. I don't want the government to protect me.
There's instead of actually putting together a policy document, which she had a lot of time to do on this issue, this is what the campaign produces. So pretty lackluster from that perspective. And the other thing that's kind of like foreign, at least to me, is just crypto is open to everybody. Just like, why, if you're trying to target a particular demographic, like, that's okay. This almost reads like it's an internal memo inside of her campaign. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, we're really losing this demographic, so we have to target them. What they could have done differently is they could have just said, like, we are pro-crypto. And if you're like a black male, or if you're like any, you know, demographic in the U.S., you would benefit from that. So I don't understand why you would get more benefits. Exactly. Why not just say, hey, we're going to be pro crypto and we're going to support crypto assets for men, women, any like gender.
No, I think they needed to name Black men, like attention,
again,
Black men.
I get if you're doing that inside your own internal campaign for demographic, but like, why make that your external press release message for crypto?
I feel like you're really failing the assignment on that. Like, honestly, kind of amateur hour.
A little weird. Okay, that's Trump. So Trump is doing a DeFi token. Kamala Harris, you know, like making these types of statements about crypto. Meanwhile, Elizabeth Warren is actually battling for her seat against a Republican.
God, we got all the characters today.
Yeah, and what I love about this is she was actually asked a question by a moderator of a debate about her anti-crypto army rhetoric and whether she still stands behind it. Should we tune into that?
Yeah, it's gonna be a long clip. This is actually okay. So John Deaton is the first person to really go after Elizabeth Warren, could go after her seat. He is a Republican from Massachusetts, extremely pro-crypto, like very much one of us.
You'll hear it.
The community is like kind of rallying behind John Deaton, definitely an underdog, but it'd be like kind of sick if he took out Liz Warren. Okay, so let's go play the clip.
You two take a very different view of the cryptocurrency industry. Senator Warren says she wants to build a, quote, anti-crypto army to rein in what she calls crypto's threat to financial stability, consumer protection, climate, and national security. You have criticized her and federal authorities for what you claim is overly aggressive regulation of crypto. What's the right balance? 1 minute.
Well, listen, I want everyone to know, when I found Bitcoin, I thought of my mom, because my mom was on welfare and food stamps, and she couldn't keep a bank account because she couldn't keep the minimum balance, and the bank would hit her with the predatory fees, and we needed that money. And then she had to go to the check cashing stores that you see in the hood, and they would charge her a fee. My mom would beg them, please, can you take less so that we have the money for food? And then when I went to college and I would send her money from college, I used Western Union, and Western Union would take 15%, and it made a difference. So when Bitcoin came, I was like, great, you could cut out the predatory banks and the middlemen and the MoneyGrams and Western Unions, and you could help unbanked people like my mom. But the better question here is for Senator Warren. With illegal immigration bankrupting this state, with inflation pricing regular people out of economy, with a debt crisis where 40% of the people don't have $500 in case of an emergency, with foreign wars taking place, why did this senator wake up one day and say, with all that, I'm going to build an anti-crypto army because crypto's so important to her?
Great question.
That's a question that she needs to answer.
Thank you. Senator, 1 minute.
So look, I'm fine. People want to buy and sell crypto. That's great. I just want to make sure that crypto has to follow the same rules
as
every bank, every stockbroker, every credit union, and that is some consumer protection laws and some laws to make sure that it's not open for terrorists and drug traffickers and human traffickers in Iran. So that's what I want. But I want to be really clear about what's really at issue here. And that is, who are you going to represent in Washington? There's one candidate standing here who gets 90% of the funding to keep their campaign going from one industry, the crypto industry. One candidate who has said quite openly that his personal worth is 80% tied up in crypto. Look, people of Massachusetts know me. You know I fight for everybody, fight for working people. If John Deaton has a chance to go to Washington, his crypto buddies are going to want a return on their investment. He's going to be there to fight for crypto.
I am so bullish that
the crazy thing about that statement is that, you know, who's the biggest financial supporter of Elizabeth Warren?
Who's that?
Banks, the big banks out there. She has been so favorable to banks and bank incumbents. The clip ends right here, but I hope that's what John Deaton replied with, because unfortunately, I think she actually did a good job kind of deflecting, counter, like rebuttaling what he said. And she's just like, well, look at this corrupt individual. For people who don't care about crypto, for people just the normal American, they're like, she just said, like, this guy, of course this guy likes Bitcoin. He's funded by all the crypto bros. And I think that might have like actually landed. But like, she's paid by the incumbents. Like, she's even worse.
Well, so what's interesting though is like, when she says that if he gets elected, he'll like you'll fight for his crypto buddies in DC. I'm like, that is good. That's what we want. Right. Because what she doesn't understand is this is not like the banking cabal, right? Like, this is about a civil liberty. It's about Americans' right to own non-custodial digital assets. Basically. Do you have the right in the United States to go bankless? It's not just like a set of like, you know, the Coinbase and like the Krakens, all of these exchanges and like A16Z, right? They are fighting for a right, the ability to buy, own, hold crypto in a non-custodial way for all Americans. And so like, I want John Deaton or any politician in there, like going to DC and actually fighting against the banks for our rights. Anyway, that's the discussion that's
going on. The idea that she's like pointing at like this crypto cabal, these like very small group of extremely wealthy insiders that is like promoting John Deaton. It's like, no, there's actually millions of us and it's we the people. It's actually the banking cabal that is the very small, concentrated, wealthy group of insiders that's pulling the strings.
Well, and the other thing is,
it's just a complete like reverse Uno card that needs to be played here.
So a couple things about this. Like, one is probably John Deaton doesn't have a chance here. I mean, this
he's
is kind
22% behind Senator Warren.
Yeah, so it's not looking
good.
In the
polls, not in Polymarket. So Polymarket has like Warren at like a 95%.
Yeah,
it would be a massive upset.
It would be a massive upset. And it is true that crypto is spending in a big way in D.C. in these elections. Like, so this is an article from Politico. Crypto has quietly become one of the biggest electoral players. You wouldn't know it from their ads. And they go on and, you know, they're kind of pitching crypto as like, oh, they're coming in here and they're trying to sway election outcomes. And I always go back to the reason is it's because it's existential for us, because it's existential for the crypto industry. Like, you didn't see this in previous elections. It's because Gary Gensler and Operation Choke Point and the executive branch and like all of the lawmakers actually trying to choke this industry out. That, you know, that's something that this article doesn't acknowledge. So anyway, mainstream sees that kind of thing. They also see Trump with a cryptocurrency. I don't know. I don't know what people on the street actually think about this this issue who are not in like crypto holders themselves.
Yeah, I think our headlines haven't like looked that great. Like I'm guessing if I just put myself into the shoes of just the average person, and the last time I heard about crypto was SBF, and now I'm hearing about the crypto industry buying the elections, I'm like, oh, it's coming back. Like, they're going to get us. We got to make sure, like, got to stamp them down. And like the other headlines that people are reading this week is, here's from Newsweek. Trump tells followers to buy family-backed cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
Like, not a great headline. Like, our headlines aren't amazing
right
now.
I know. It's like, it's definitely difficult. We got to win on the ground game. Back to the presidential in summary, right? The question is, what happens if Kamala Harris wins to crypto in the US, and what happens if Trump wins? And this is Alex Thorne commenting on this. He says, the bottom line, while Trump is undoubtedly more favorable for the industry, we're optimistic. He's saying that on behalf of Galaxy Research, that we're optimistic that Harris could be more supportive than Biden has been. And he like sources this chart where he goes through the main issues, you know, and the main government bodies like the SEC, Treasury, IRS issues, Bitcoin mining, self-custody, and he scores them. Red, yellow, green. Green being, of course, good. Red being bad. You can see the Biden column here. It's like basically
red.
All red.
It's a
There's
big
like
red
one
candle.
Yellow. And then you go to the other side, and you see the Trump like column, and it's all pretty much green. There's a little
bit
of yellow,
candle.
But mostly green. And then in the middle is Harris and Walz. And this is a bit more mixed. There's some light shade of green, just a little bit more yellow, a little bit of red.
Well, yellow's bad.
Yeah.
It's not in the middle. It's yellow with, they got a couple neutrals, one green, a lot of yellows, and then one red.
Basically, it seems like not from his perspective and from Galaxy's perspective, not as harsh as the Biden administration, more toned down, certainly not as bullish as Trump and Vance would be. So that, I guess, is a change in the right direction if this comes to pass.
The Kamala campaign being indifferent to crypto is unfortunately a step in the right direction based off of Biden, like, because Biden was just like so bad. If Kamala just doesn't, if she gets elected and just doesn't care about crypto, that's actually still like an improvement.
Yeah. And also we'll have to see what the Senate does and the rest of Congress. Coming up next, we got Ethereum with some new roll-up technology. David, I want you to tell us about the new fuel chain and this super performant EVM chain coming out of Paradigm. And Kraken wrapping up some Bitcoin. What could that mean for the future? Oh, also, this is great, David. They caught the guy who hacked the SEC Twitter on that Bitcoin ETF announcement day. So we'll talk about all of that and more. But before we do, we want to thank the sponsors that made this episode possible, including Mantle, which is an L2 you absolutely have to check out. Here they are.
New projects are coming online to the Mantle Layer 2 every single week. Why is this happening? Maybe it's because Mantle has been on the frontier of Layer 2 design architecture since it first started building Mantle DA, powered by technology from EigenDA. Maybe it's because users are coming onto the Mantle Layer 2 to capture some of the highest yields available in DeFi and to automatically receive the points and tokens being accrued by the $3 billion Mantle treasury in the Mantle reward station. Maybe it's because the Mantle team is one of the most helpful teams to build with, giving you grants, liquidity support and venture partners to help bootstrap your Mantle application. Maybe it's all of these reasons all put together. So if you're a dev and you want to build on one of the best foundations in crypto, or you're a user looking to claim some ownership on Mantle's DeFi apps, click the link in the show notes to getting started with Mantle. The Uniswap wallet is officially the preferred wallet of Bankless, and it's the one we use anytime when we want to transact on-chain. Whether you're on your browser or on the go, Uniswap wallet makes it easier than ever to swap anytime, anywhere. Use your wallet to transfer funds directly from a top centralized exchange and tap in thousands of tokens across Ethereum and over 10 other chains like Base, Arbitrum, and Optimism. Uniswap wallet delivers deep liquidity, fast execution, and reliable quotes with zero gas swaps through Uniswap X. And when it comes to security, you can rest easy knowing it's backed by Uniswap Labs, one of the most trusted teams in DeFi. Their code is open source and independently reviewed, so you know it's protected. So why wait? Download the Uniswap wallet today on Chrome, iOS, and Android. And don't forget to claim your free uni.eth username directly in the mobile wallet. Start swapping smarter with Uniswap.
All right, so this was great, David. They caught the guy who hacked the SEC Twitter account. Do you remember this? There was like this fake announcement from the SEC Twitter account. And it was like, we're announcing...
It was a day before the Bitcoin ETFs.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or was it ETH or Bitcoin?
It was the Bitcoin ETFs, right?
Bitcoin. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it turned out that the SEC Twitter account was compromised. Of course, there was market activity based on this tweet. And everyone was like, oh my God, you're like a government agency. How did this actually happen? Well, the FBI tracked the guy who did this. Apparently, he lives in Alabama somewhere. This is the tweet.
Oh, he lives inside the country?
All right. So get this. It gets better. The FBI arrests the man behind SEC Twitter account for posting the fake ETF approval. Here were this man's Google searches. Okay, just like after, make this hack. After he sim swapped the SEC, he Googled SEC gov hack. That was his first Google, followed by how can I know for sure if I'm being investigated by the FBI? Followed by what are the signs that you are under investigation by law enforcement or the FBI, even if you have not been contacted by them?
These are terrible queries. This guy's not Googling very well.
Which caused Doge Toshi on Twitter to say, we have some of the smartest and dumbest people in the world in crypto, and they're often the same. So there you go. A full story there.
All right. Coming out of the world of more serious news, crypto exchange Kraken launches wrapped Bitcoin token KBTC, available both on Ethereum Layer 1 and the OP mainnet. Call it Cracked BTC. I'm calling it Cracked BTC. I mean, Kraken has been one of the biggest and strongest custody providers of Bitcoin. They are big Bitcoin bulls. Makes sense to wrap it up and put it on Optimism and Ethereum.
Yeah, it does make sense. And they're partnering with a whole bunch of blue chip DeFi apps. So they're getting this cracked Bitcoin far and wide in the DeFi Ethereum ecosystem. Of course, Coinbase launched their wrapped Bitcoin product about a month ago. So this is Kraken with a fast follow there, looking to gain some liquidity.
Also in the world of Layer 2s, Fuel Network finally launched a supercharged Ethereum Layer 2. Fuel's kind of one of the more differentiated Layer 2s in the Ethereum space. It's a UTXO-based model. So instead of an account model, it's UTXO-based. It's got its own virtual machine. They call the Fuel VM. It's also got some native account abstraction, parallelization. They claim 21,000 transactions per second. It's the Ethereum Layer 1 for DA. And it's aiming for a Stage 2 launch. So one of the most sophisticated, robust Layer 2s coming out of the gate. Fuel has been working on this for a long time. You've already had their kind of like their V1 network. That's been up and running. And so congratulations to Fuel. I know David Michal, who we have used his websites in the past, like CryptoFees, moneyprinters.info. He got Fuel pilled and joined that team about a year ago. So Fuel has been like nerd sniping a bunch of devs for a while.
It's a really cool project, right? Some OGs in the space. And it's like as Stage 2, you're talking with respect to decentralization, right? On L2 Beats. Mm-hmm. So it'll be like the most decentralized Layer 2 that we have. And they've really dialed it up because it's not the EVM, as you said. They really dialed this up to be like a payment type chain, right? Yeah. 21,000 transactions per second is absolutely insane. And so people can download the Fuel wallet if they want. There'll be a link in the show notes to that. Also, Bankless put together a Fuel points program on its airdrop hunter. So if you're a Bankless citizen, you can go check that out. That's a good onboarding technique to get started with Fuel, do some of those quests as well. That wasn't the only Layer 2 that launched something big this week. We got something coming out of Paradigm. It's a new Layer 2 called Odyssey. And this has another take on layer two tech. What is this, David?
Interesting curveball out of Paradigm these days. Georgios Konstantopoulos from Paradigm, the CTO of Paradigm, is now also spinning off to this $20 million raise of this company, Ithaca. Ithaca is a new company that and is producing Odyssey, which is the Wrath base, the client that Georgios has been producing internal to Paradigm. Wrath-based OP stack using Conduit at the core. And so the CTO of Paradigm is now also the CEO of Ithaca, which produces, the CEO of Ithaca, which produces Odyssey, a very juiced layer two. I think this is like Paradigm's version of Mega ETH.
Me too.
Paradigm's a very juiced up Paradigm with a very strong
Paradigm.
A very strong technical lead, Georgios, at the helm. And so this is a both a client that I hope becomes a dominant client of the Ethereum layer one,
while Wrath,
also
you mean.
Being Wrath, yes, while also being one of Ethereum's biggest and fastest layer twos.
Yeah.
So big congrats to Georgios. He's been working on Wrath for a very long time. Dan Robinson tweets out, Georgios pioneered the idea of building open source software at a VC firm on the theory that the best way to help the portfolio is to advance the tech for the whole industry. With Wrath and Foundry, his crack team did that and more, excited for him to go all in on the effort.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool because, you know, like all of this is open source, of course. And Wrath is a new client. It's a super high performant EVM chain. That's why you sort of compared it to Mega ETH there, because that's another like high performance layer two that's just totally dialing up transactions per second. And that's what we have to expect out of this project. So some big layer two tech upgrades. This is coming down on a weekly basis. And another one from Conduit, which we just mentioned in the context of this Odyssey chain. But Conduit, it's like a roll-up as a service provider. And they are launching something called G2. What is this?
Yeah, the Conduit G2. So many roll-ups use Conduit to host, maintain, manage, upgrade their roll-ups. Zora is one, for example. Avo Synthetics uses Conduit. Mode Network is a Conduit chain. Proof of Play is a Conduit chain. And so if you just want somebody to manage your chain, these are professional chain managers. Again, roll up as a service provider. And so they just built out Conduit G2, which they are presenting as the most powerful sequencer. And so all of Conduit chains have the ability to upgrade to Conduit G2, which is offering 1,000x the compute of Ethereum. That is somewhere in the realm of 50 to 100 megagas. Now, remember Jesse and Base's road to one gigagas? Well, yes. Conduit is providing 100 megagas. And so they're already 1/10 of the way there. I'm pretty sure they leapfrog Base here. They claim 10x higher performance than any other off-the-shelf sequencer. Claiming 4,700 transactions per second, then wow. And this is 100% compatible with the OP stack and Orbit chains, which is like most of the chains out there. So all of the Conduit chains that exist, all the chains I just mentioned, they get to just flip over to this G2 and then have this like massive upgrade. Really big news coming out of the Ethereum like scaling story this week.
Yeah, and I think this is just like going to compound, and it's going to be sort of every week. These types of improvement, we'll see these types of improvements. David, let's switch over to.
We have been seeing this like every week. This is kind of just what like Ethereum scaling looks like. It just comes from all over the place.
Yeah. Well, Ethereum is building out its layer two infrastructure. I think Bitcoin, and in particular, Michael Saylor is wanting to build out Bitcoin in the TradFi system. In particular, he wants to turn MicroStrategy into a bit of a Bitcoin bank. He says this, Bitcoin is the most valuable asset in the world. The end game for MicroStrategy is to be the leading Bitcoin bank or merchant bank, or you'd call it a Bitcoin finance company. So if we end up with 20 billion of converts, 20 billion of preferred stock, 10 billion of debt, and 50 billion of some kind of debt instrument structured, we'll have 100 to 150 billion of Bitcoin. So turning MicroStrategy into a services-based Bitcoin bank company seems to be part of the end game strategy for Michael Saylor.
I mean, just because MicroStrategy owns a ton of Bitcoin, I don't think it actually advantages it in any way. I think the only thing that's really happening here is MicroStrategy is using his brand, the brand of MicroStrategy, which I guess works.
Yeah. Yeah. No problem with building out a Bitcoin bank for, I think this is part of like, you know, the Bitcoin standard, Saifedean Ammous. It was never about like building out layer twos or decentralized finance. Mm. It was just like building Bitcoin the asset and then it letting a whole bunch of, you know, centralized custodians, banking, other banks, like just, you know, start using the Bitcoin network as kind of a whale chain. So that seems to be what's coming to pass here. David, there was some interesting news coming out of Italy this week. Italy plans to raise capital gains tax on crypto from 26% to 42%. What was interesting...
specifically on Bitcoin. Only
Bitcoin.
It
was all crypto. No, all crypto.
It's crypto, excuse me. It's crypto. Yeah.
But specifically on all crypto, right? So, and I think this is an example of a country like targeting crypto specifically. Mm-hmm. This is something that, you know, Ray Dalio has predicted. This is something that the sovereign individual has predicted, that as capital flees fiat due to like bad government policy, you know, like deficits, and they're spending too much, more than they're taking in, capital responds in kind and it tries to flee to safer non-sovereign assets, essentially. And so what do governments do? They react by constraining the crypto exit ramps and putting in additional taxes. So this has played out many times in history. It's going to play out again with crypto. So watch for this type of thing. We're very early in this. It's, you know, only a 42% capital gains tax, but this window could continue to close in the future.
Yeah, and at some point, the book would predict some countries are just, you know, instead of raising the capital gains tax, they raise it to 100% by making it illegal. You just can't have Bitcoin.
Right.
And so you need to get your Bitcoin out of the system before you do that.
Yeah. Well, speaking of getting out of the system and going bankless, we got another bankless summit that is coming up. So we just did a conference at Permissionless, but the bankless summit, tell us about this. This is on the heels of DevCon that's happening over in Thailand, yes?
Yeah, this is the first bankless summit ever. We've never done one of these before. I'm pretty excited. Bankless summit is happening the day after DevCon, as you said, Saturday, November 16th. 12 speakers. Zero panels, 12 speakers, zero panels, just straight information. All of these speakers of Bankless Summit, which I've hand selected to be because they are the best orators in crypto. They have the best ideas. They're the most passionate. They're just really entertaining to listen to. I have charged them with the assignment of producing the most interesting talk possible. Do something interesting is the assignment. And Anthony Cezano is going to open it up. Justin Drake told me that his talk is painfully bullish. Ansgar and Casper will talk about the ETH monetary policy. Max Resnick is going to talk about making the Ethereum layer one great again. Mike Noyder, who's a researcher, he's getting his PhD sometime soon. He always just makes really good presentations. Same thing with Matt Cutler from Block Native. Eric Wall is going to be there. Sriram, who I know has like way more ideas and really fascinating ideas than I think he's even able to get out, he's going to speak. And so this is the day after DevCon, so you need to get your ticket. There are not a lot of tickets. There's like over 10,000 people going to DevCon. There are only 600 Bankless Summit tickets, and two of them, we've already sold 200 of them. Do the math. There's 400 tickets left. And so you got to get your ticket. Again, it's the Saturday after DevCon, so it's going to be the last thing you do at DevCon. I think it's going to be one of the most interesting things you can do at DevCon. So you don't want to miss it. It's going to be pretty fun.
I also think this summit will be very bullish Ether, the asset. If I know the content that you're planning and what these speakers are planning, so I will be sad to miss that. But I am enjoying the recent resurgence of ETH bullishness on my Twitter timeline. David, did you catch this meme this week? This is from...
I did catch this meme.
Jesse Echtel. This is David Hoffman punching Kane Warwick right in the face. I can't believe
it would have been funnier if Kane was like a Bitcoiner or a Solana person.
I know, because you like your friends, but like
this is technically ETH on ETH violence.
Yeah, David punching, like, and he's labeled ETH, punching through 20K ETH price as, the Sol Maxis, crypto Twitter, and the alt layer ones are all kind of looking in, in the background, looking in the audience. And yeah, dude, that was a great fight. That's all I got to say. So
you and Ben as commentators, you guys had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I have seen, though, it seems like, I don't know if you're seeing this, but the Ethereum community is like fighting back a bit more in the narrative war. Did you catch this Kyle Samani and Steven from Goldfeder from Arbitrum interaction? This is Steven at the top saying, the genius of Arbitrum is it doesn't force another token into your chain design. And then he goes on to say, governance is freedom, never give it up. And then Kyle Samani says, LMAO, you literally issued 100% superfluous token. And then Steven goes,
which is a hot take.
That's a hot take. That's a hot take. And then Steven goes, sorry we didn't let you into the Series A, bro. I know you're still salty, but it's been years. Might be time to let it go. And then what happens, wow. David?
Kyle Samani responds, huh? We never spoke. So he's like declining the fact that he was not allowed into the Arbitrum Series A. He's just saying that we never spoke. That never happened. And then Stephen Goldfeder says, I know honesty in debates is not your strong point, but dude, you were relentless and I have receipts. Here's one of many. And then he just screenshots a Telegram conversation with what it's got to be Multicoin and the Arbitrum people. Yeah. And there's, I'm guessing what is like a Multicoin, like associate partner says, somebody named Mabel says, let us know if there is an update on the round. We'd be very keen to participate. And then no response from any Arbitrum people. The next day, Kyle Samani comes in. So like the big guns, the GP says, hey guys, just checking in. We want to roll up our sleeves and help, which like in VC land is like, they're knocking on the door every single day. It's like, hey guys, like we want in the round. We want in the round, blah, 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 blah. Please let us in the round. They apparently were not let into the Arbitrum A round, Series A round. This tweet has 1,000 likes on it, whereas the tweet before, the Kyle Samani tweet, has like 7.
Yeah,
it is one of the biggest ratios in crypto Twitter history that I've ever seen.
It's gotten kind of spicy out there. And Kyle says, I guess you got me, but it doesn't really change anything in the thread above. Yeah.
Question.
Yeah.
Did Kyle Samani lie or did he forget?
I don't know. That's all between Kyle and God, man. I don't know.
Did he lie about not remembering that he's getting into one of Ethereum's largest layer 2 Series A round? Did he forget that? Or did he lie?
We'll leave that to the listener to decide. It is getting kind of bullish out there on Ethereum. I think the tides have turned. We've got Vitalik posting about the roadmap.
This was like the first of like 7 ratios between Ethereum community members and Ethereum antagonists.
Which is
out
hard
there.
To
I think
do
a lot of the
on
Ethereum community. Yeah, because the Ethereum community is not like militant.
No.
The Bitcoiners,
not usually.
They're militant. The Solana people, they're militant. The Ethereum people are just like, whatever, like we got work to do.
It's a good setup.
And so it actually takes it's pretty hard to rabble the Ethereum community up, but the Ethereum community feels very rabbled at this present moment.
Yeah, they feel like it feels like they're done with the shit. So they're going on the attack. We'll see what happens next. But of course, gotta let you know. Crypto is risky. You lose what you put in, but we are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.